Israel, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being with us. We have Dr. John Lott, who is a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. And, of course, we're going to be talking about his two books, one, More Guns, Less Crime, and two, his most recent book, The Bias Against Guns. Dr. Lott, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so very much for being with us. And, of course, we've had the opportunity of talking to John on several previous occasions. And so we really want to bring out the fact that there really is an organized effort to discourage gun ownership. And, of course, as he brings out so well in his book, The Bias Against Guns, they do make up an awful lot of statistics, don't they?
Yeah, no, they give people real misimpression about the costs and benefits of guns. And my concern is that misimpression actually endangers people's lives, whether it's issues about claims about the number of children who die from accidental gun deaths each year or even how people should behave when they're confronted by a criminal. I think a lot of that misinformation has real consequences for people's safety.
Well, now, what about these figures? You know, we see the picture of this little girl, and it says, you know, a child dies every so many minutes in America of a gun-related death, something of that sort, or so many children die every day of gun-related deaths. What are the truths about those statistics?
Right. Well, I mean, if you go back and look at the public service ads are put out by the Clinton administration, you consistently saw voices or pictures of children between the ages of 4 and 8, never a voice or a picture of a child over age 8. And the implications that they would give is that the numbers that they were talking about were actually referring to children in those age categories, as you say. And unfortunately, it wasn't even close. And people got this impression that they were talking about accidental gun deaths being an epidemic for children that were similar to the voices or pictures and age that they were showing in either the radio or the television ads. If you look at the numbers that they get, would almost entirely be driven by homicides involving 17, 18, 19-year-olds, which is important, but it wasn't very clear to me why somebody would go and try to include deaths from gang fights over drug turf when you're trying to talk to people about whether or not they should own guns in their homes.
And whether or not they should have them locked up so that children don't shoot themselves, right?
Right. And exactly. And if you look at, you can go to the Centers for Disease Control website and look under the mortality and morbidity reports. And what you'll find is that for 1999, for example, there were 31 accidental gun deaths in the United States for children under age 10, corresponding to those ads.
All right, we're going to be right back here in just a moment with our special guest today, Dr. John Lott, talking about, of course, the bias against guns. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Dr. John Lott. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and of course, he's written a number of books, which we have talked about in the past, the More Guns, Less Crime, and of course, his latest book, The Bias Against Guns. And of course, we've been just talking, chatting before we went on the air with our local affiliate, which we just added, about how the statistics, which you saw on television, talking about all the children, the little children who are being killed by gun-related accidents. And as Dr. Lott was pointing out, if you go to the CDC webpage for 1999, how many were 31 or 32 children, less than younger children who were killed by guns in the home?
Right, it was 31. Right, for children under 10, which corresponds to the ages that they had for the children, the ads and the pictures.
All right, fine. And of course, the other thing is that most of those children who were killed in the home weren't killed by another child with a gun or accidentally finding a gun, were they?
No, that's exactly right. They were. Most of those 31 deaths are from gunshots from adult males, usually with long history of arrest for violent crimes, and are very likely to be either alcoholics or drug addicts. And in 1999, there were 6 cases in the United States where a child under 10 either accidentally killed themselves or another child under 10. And that's not an unusual number. I mean, it's from 1995 through 99, you're talking about between 5 and 9 cases a year. Now, I mean, anybody wishes that it would be 0 rather than 5 or 9 or 6 or whatever, but when you consider the fact that there's some 90 million Americans that own guns, that there are 40 million kids under age 10 in the United States, I would argue it's pretty hard to think of virtually any other item that is commonly owned in American homes that's anywhere near as dangerous, that has as few accidental deaths associated as you have with guns. I mean, you have more children under age 5 who drown in 5-gallon plastic water buckets than you have under age 10 who die from any type of accidental gunshot. You have more children under age 5 who drown in bathtubs in the home than under age 15 who died from any type of accidental gunshot.
But, of course, nobody ever puts this into perspective because there is an agenda. There is a bias against guns, and of course, if they can get these gun laws passed, no sense having a gun if you can't have a loaded gun in the house. What good's it going to do? The criminal just loves to go into a house where, of course, they know that they are not in danger of being shot themselves. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest today. Well, Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is John Lott. We're talking about the bias against guns. And one of the things we really wanted to talk about today, of course, was the President Bush has said that he will support the renewal of the Brady gun bill. What is the significance of the Brady gun bill? Why in heaven's name is this bill in any way important?
All right, well, he's supporting the renewal of the assault weapons ban.
Right. The assault weapons ban.
Right. And most people, when they hear about this, think that we're talking about machine guns, and that's surely the image that the media has created there. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, CNN got into some trouble because they started off a news segment that they were doing on the assault weapons ban by showing machine guns being fired to begin with. And it has nothing to do with that. The 19 guns that were banned in 1994 were all semi-automatics. That means one trigger pull releases one bullet. And the vast majority of guns that are sold in the United States are semi-automatic guns. The ones that are banned were no different in terms of the types of bullets that they fired or the rapidity that you could fire the bullets. What was different about them was either the name of the gun or that there was some type of cosmetic feature that they had, such as whether they had a bayonet mount or a recoil suppressor. You look at the evidence on this, and either the federal assault weapons ban or the 5 states that have had their own bans, there's no evidence that any of these rules have had any impact on crime rates. And pretty simple why that should be the case. I mean, one, usually these regulations didn't stop the guns from being sold per se. What happened was that the name of the gun would be changed or they would get rid of the cosmetic feature on it, and then they would continue selling it. But even if there was something magical about those particular guns, there's, as I say, functionally identical guns out there already. And so it's not too surprising that you don't see any impact on crime rates from any of these types of laws.
And, of course, it's not the law-abiding citizens you have to worry about. It's the criminal element. But, of course, the criminal element is going to defy the law. The law-abiding element is going to obey the law and become defenseless against the criminals. That's really what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think for the laws in general, one of the things that rarely gets talked about is the cost of these laws, and the reason why that rarely gets brought up is because people just don't talk about defensive gun use. You rarely hear that being talked about in the media. But, you know, you could take an extreme case. Let's say, to illustrate your point, let's say tomorrow we pass a law banning guns. Well, who would be the types of people who would go and turn in their guns? My guess is it would be the most law-abiding citizens and not the criminals. And if my research convinces me of anything, it's that in such a case you'd actually see increases in violent crime rather than drops. I mean, admittedly, that's an extreme case. These laws aren't talking about banning guns completely, but it's still a matter of degree. And the everybody wants to go and try to go and take guns away from criminals. The problem is that very frequently, exactly as you say, these laws are much more likely to be obeyed by law-abiding citizens than criminals.
One of the things that was so interesting to me was, of course, this perception that has been created in the minds of the American people that now we're going to have armed pilots on our planes. And, of course, the Congress voted overwhelmingly that the pilots should have a right to be armed. And, of course, I think the overwhelming number of the people would feel far more comfortable having an armed pilot to protect them than knowing that there was an F-16 out there, and if their plane was hijacked, the F-16 was going to shoot the plane down. Which would you rather have? And I'd rather have an armed pilot, and I think most people would. But circumvent, of course, the will of the people, what's so interesting, and you commented this on another program, was that, of course, they put on one class, and they train 40 pilots, and they have no plans, of course, to train anymore, but they've created the perception in the idea in the mind of the American people that, of course, we're going to have armed pilots. Is that a fairly accurate appraisal of what's happened?
Right. I mean, we're 21 months or so after September 11th, and out of the 100,000-plus commercial passenger pilots that we have in the United States, 44 pilots have been trained. The program hasn't been ended, but there has been no new date that's been scheduled for when any additional pilots are going to be trained. And, about a month and a half ago, we had the first class of pilots go through. And you would think that once they got started with the program, they would keep on going, particularly given the long delay for getting the program started. But twice now, not just once, but twice now, Congress has overwhelmingly voted with about nearly 90 votes or so in the Senate, for example, each time a bill has gotten passed, supporting this. And yet the administration now, rather than trying to directly fight this, has basically taken the approach that they'll just delay and, as you say, kind of convince people or lull them into the belief that something's being done there when, in fact, the program's not going forward now.
And in other words, then later on, when, of course, if there is another hijacking and a lot of life, they'll say, oh, shucks, we made a mistake. We should have got those pilots armed at that time. Well, we'll do it now. Now, what about the armed marshals program? I thought that was really so interesting because, of course, up until 1993, we had armed marshals on our planes. And at that time, that very year, a book came out talking about it was a book called Attack America, I think it was, by Joseph Podansky, who's head of the Republican Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. And in his book, Attack America, he talked about the training camp in Iran, where they were actually had 747s, 707s, and they were planning there to teach the terrorists to hijack planes so they could crash them into our buildings. He said that in his book. And it was that very year they stopped the armed marshal programs on our planes. Why would they have done that? Why would they have taken armed marshals off of our planes in 1993?
Yeah, there weren't that many armed marshals still functioning on planes at that time. You know, it's kind of an official secret how many there were, so I don't know. But, it's a bit of a mystery why they stopped it. I mean, one thing you can say is that armed marshals are relatively expensive. I mean, you're paying people a fair amount of money just to fly back and forth, and it's a very boring job. You have high attrition rates for the people that go and do it. I mean, one of the advantages about arming pilots is that they're on the plane anyway. These guys do it for free. In fact, most of them feel much, much better knowing that they're able to have a gun there to protect themselves as well as their crew and the passengers. And, you know, they're already performing a job. And, the amazing thing right now is that even after we've ramped up the Marshals program, of course, now they've stopped hiring for like the last 6 months or so, any new Marshals. But only about over 1% or so of the flights in the United States have armed Marshals on them.
Now, your comment was, of course, that the majority of those planes are the ones that fly in and out of Washington, D.C., so certainly the congressmen and the senators will be protected by the Marshals, but isn't it pretty unlikely that any other flights will be protected by the Marshals? And yet the American people have been told over, we're so concerned about this war on terrorism and the threat of the wicked Osama bin Laden and the wicked Al-Qaeda that we're going to protect you. And, of course, we're going to protect us by this ridiculous searching at the airports. Wouldn't it be very, very easy to take a ceramic knife on and tape it to the inner side of your leg? They'd never find that, would they?
No, I mean, I'm sure your listeners have flown, and they can just imagine if they had a weapon that didn't have metal in it, like a ceramic knife, just as you described, taped to the inside of their leg, unless they had a full body search, unless people went and literally patted down the insides of their legs, it would never be discovered. And there's, you know, that's just one example of the type of thing you can try to do there. And I think the people who run these programs realize that absent a full body search on people, sure, it's possible for them to get lethal weapons on the plane.
So they've done everything they could to block the pilots from being armed, although the president on his plane has armed guards. They've done everything they could. I mean, they haven't really followed through with the Marshall training program. What about, of course, reinforcing the doors in our airplanes, which gives us this feeling, oh, now we're really safe because, of course, they've reinforced the doors to the cockpit. What's the truth about that?
Well, reinforcing the doors has done some little benefit, but I don't think there's really any experts out there who believe that they'll prevent even the second generation of doors that went into effect on April the 1st are going to stop somebody from being able to get into a plane, into the cockpit. You have an example a while ago where an overnight cleaning crew at Dulles Airport near Washington for a United plane just kind of playfully knocked a drink cart into the door to see how strong it was. And while the door basically remained in one piece, the door itself broke away from the wall, so you had a big gaping hole there. Because, I mean, the walls are still made out of the same basic material that they were made out of previously. And, it's fairly disappointing. I mean, the administration is basically relying on three legs to try to deal with possible problems: Marshals, the screening that you say, and the doors. And there's, as you just went through, there's serious problems with each of those. And why there's this opposition, you know, unstated opposition, this kind of delaying tactics on pilots is pretty disappointing.
It really makes you wonder how serious we really are about the war on terrorism. And we'll deal more with that when we get back. We'll welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call. We'd love to have you give us a call if you have a question for John Lott. The book, of course, The Bias Against Guns. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamet. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamax, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamax isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamax at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just wanted to mention the water filters, the Big Berkey water filter. Will filter about 25 gallons of water a day. It's a portable water filter, and you put about 2.5 gallons in the top. It runs down to the bottom, and, of course, you can take that out and put more in if you need it, or just use it for your drinking water during the course of the day. It has a ceramic filter. It's made of stainless steel, and, of course, it's been the standard for missionaries throughout the world for well over 100, closer to 150 years. Now, the Big Berkey, of course, ordinarily retails for $279. It's available through Radio Liberty for $239, and if you buy it through us, you'll either get a 4-tape set or a video that we've actually produced along with that. And so we recommend the Big Berkey to you. It's been a standard used for many, many years. It is available in every state except for California and Iowa. Now, if you'd like to get a different type of water filter, basically it's built upon the same concept. You put the water in the top, it comes out the bottom. It's called a Berkey Light. And, of course, instead of being stainless steel, it's transparent. It's made out of the same material that you make bulletproof glass out of. And, of course, you can has a different type of filter. It's called a black Berkey filter. Really much more efficient than the ceramic carbon filters in the Big Berkey, but they also have to be replaced every couple of years, whereas the Big Berkey filters can be cleaned and boiled and used over and over again and will last for many years. The actual other filters, the black Berkey filters, have to be replaced every 2 or 4 years. So that's $199 plus shipping, and of course we throw in a video or a 4-tape set. If you'd like to get it for us, from us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can see the Big Berkey filters there. You can see the Berkey light filters. Really, these are very, very popular. They're used throughout the country. They'll take out the bacteria, and they'll take out most of the minerals and many of the dangerous chemicals. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Dr. Lott from the American Enterprise Institute. We have calling from Idaho, Ed. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How did you find us? Are you listening on shortwave or the internet?
The net.
Okay, fine, because we're having real problems with the shortwave. They keep moving us around from station to station. So anyway, I'm glad you called. I'm glad you're listening. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. From a plain common sense standpoint, actually, from a constitutional standpoint, no gun laws are valid. That goes from the Sullivan laws to the NFA 34 to GCA 68, Laudenberg, Brady, 94, all these bills are blatantly unconstitutional. The language in the Second Amendment is quite clear. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Infringed is an absolute term. There's no misunderstanding that. And the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, I was always taught in grade school and right on through applied to the people, that being the individuals. And all one needs to do for further confirmation is to check the writings of the Founding Fathers, and that could be said by Samuel Adams, who said that the said Constitution shall never be construed to authorize Congress to prevent the people of the United States who are peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. And from Thomas Jefferson, the Constitution of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that it is their right and duty to be armed at all times.
Ed, you're absolutely right. Everything you say is absolutely right. The reality is most of our people don't even understand the Constitution. We have Supreme Court justices and people within our legislature who have a different agenda. You need to help us get people to understand the foundation of our freedom, which is in the Constitution of the United States.
Absolutely.
Okay, and
which
I appreciate
is derived from the Bible, and that's why they don't teach the Constitution in school, and that's why they don't teach the Bible in school.
Absolutely.
Because they would teach it to these kids, and they would eventually figure it out.
Right. Well, we can't let that happen because we would, of course, defeat the globalists. But thanks so much, Ed. You're absolutely right.
Dr. Stan, yeah. One last point.
Okay, fine.
This whole business with all these gun laws, which not one of them are valid, not one of them are constitutional. I don't understand why your guest. Attorneys that are gun people do not sue the United States for their own right for recognizing the Second Amendment. I don't understand why this has not happened.
All right, well, let's ask you, Dr. Lawton. Thank you so much. What would your comment be to Ed, who really is incensed and justifiably so, because the Second Amendment, of course, does give the individual the right to keep and bear arms, but I know you're approaching this from a logical point of view rather than a constitutional point of view. How would you respond to him?
Right. Well, I guess the point is that, I understand what he's saying, and I'm sympathetic with what he's saying, but my guess is for most people in the vast middle, the bottom line for them is what impact do these laws have on people's safety? Now, the reason why people don't go and bring these suits is because they probably would lose. And judges over time, I think, and the justices on the Supreme Court, like to bring in what they call balancing tests, that there's no absolute given in the Constitution, whether it be laws regarding free speech, so you have campaign finance type regulations. It seems pretty clear there. It says Congress shall pass no law. But they say, well, they don't really mean no law. They just mean laws unless there's a really good public policy. They shouldn't pass laws unless there's a really good public policy reason.
Now, don't you think that we really are in danger of having a nation of men rather than a nation of law? Because law doesn't change simply because somebody says it changes. It has to be amended by the difficult techniques that were laid out by our founding fathers. And, of course, the fear has always been that we would move away from the Constitution to a government of law of men and eventually then with the loss of all freedom, because that's what's happened down through the ages with every government that has become a democracy.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's right. I think that, they can't change the Constitution directly, and so what's happened is it's been a lot easier to change how you interpret the Constitution. And if you make it elastic enough that you can go and say, well, you have to have these types of balancing tests. I mean, I've taught in law schools. I've been at the University of Chicago Law School, and I've been held a position at Yale Law School. And so I've been around these people, and it's they think that they know basically what's right, and so they should use their judgment in trying to determine whether it's gun laws or free speech exactly what should be done there. And my concern is that they're wrong on several counts. Not only are they wrong on what seems like pretty straightforward writings of the Constitution, but I think more importantly, at least from where they're coming from, they're wrong on what's going to make people safer.
Amen. I'm going to have to interrupt you because we got to go to a break, but I want to pick up on that thought as soon as we get back. Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and apropos of what our caller from Idaho was saying, but Ed from Idaho was saying, what we need to do is teach people about the Constitution, and that's why we're working with the Institute of the Constitution, and of course they have a program. It's 12 lectures, half-hour lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo on the Christian history of America, on our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, how our system of government was set up. There are two videos by David Bartlett. It'll take you about 14 weeks to get through the program, but of course all you have to do is get the people there. The videos are there. The summary of the talk is there. The questions and answers are all there. Call 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. 410-760-9068. If you're concerned about your freedom, we need to let people understand about the heritage of this country, about our Constitution, because if we don't know who we were, we certainly don't know who we are today. But I can tell you for certain that we're going to lose our freedom. Again, that's the Institute of the Constitution. And I want to mention, of course, that we also carry Phonopoly. It is a game that'll teach your children, your grandchildren, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically and undo what has been done by intentionally by our schools, and that is deprive many children the ability to be able to read easily and pronounce words and spell words, because phonics is the foundation of reading. And the fact that they've been able to deceive the American people, they've been able to dumb down generation after generation of our people. You need to get a reflects their control. You need to get a Phonopoly set. It's 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books that will help you to understand what they've done to the educational system. Call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WARDS. Phonopoly. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. John Lott. His book, of course, is The Bias Against Guns. And, of course, we've got Fred calling in from the Salinas area. And I'll get our number out again. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, Fred, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I had a comment. I listened to an interview with the sheriff of Little Rock, Arkansas this morning. And he had, when he first come into office, they had had a horrible rash of armed robberies in Little Rock. And so they put a sign up in front of all the stores in Little Rock, Arkansas, that said that every store had been, they had installed a shotgun in every store, and the people were authorized to shoot any armed robbers. And he said the first year they hadn't had any armed robberies yet.
Well, gee, you know, in fact, Dr. Lott has suggested, you know, how would you feel about putting up a sign in front of your house and saying, there are no guns in this house? Wouldn't you feel that that would be encouraging robbers to come?
Yeah, just come and get it.
Right. Anyway, anything else you want to say, Fred?
Oh, thank you.
Well, Dr. Lott, what would your response be to what Fred's story about the sheriff of Little Rock, Arkansas? That sounds like what we really ought to be doing across America.
Well, it sounds like a good idea. I mean, I'm not sure every store has to have it, but surely if the criminals think that there's a high probability that somebody's going to be able to defend themselves and prevent the criminals from harming people, that's going to make them think twice. And, just as you can have more police or higher arrest rates, whatever, to deter criminals, the fact that victims might be able to defend themselves even when the police aren't there, I think matters. And I think the evidence shows that out consistently.
And I think you're absolutely right. It isn't important that every store has a shotgun, but if there's a perception that it may be there and you may get shot, they've actually done interviews on prisoners, haven't they?
Right.
Like burglars. And what's their response to this idea of gun control?
Right. Well, it's not just been done in the United States. They've done similar types of surveys across different countries. And what you find is that in a country like the United States, for example, These surveys indicate that burglars spend much longer times casing a dwelling before they break in as compared to, let's say, their foreign counterparts in Britain. And when they're asked why do they spend the amount of time that they do casing a dwelling, the number one reason by far that they give is that American burglars are worried about being shot. And so they try to make sure that nobody's in the residence before they break in. In Britain, there's little fear of that. And in fact, 6 out of every 10 times that burglars break into a home, the residents are in the dwelling in the home because they're much less fearful, the burglars are, of what the residents can do to them when they break into the residence there.
Well, now, of course, so what's happening in England? They've got very, very strict gun control laws, and they've totally disarmed the law-abiding citizens. What's happening as far as their crime, murder, and other rates are concerned?
Well, there's been a big increase in violent crime there during the 90s, in fact, over the last 100 years. I mean, if you go back to London, for example, in 1900, a city of millions of people, there were a total of 2 gun murders that took place in the entire city. This is before they had any gun control laws really to speak of. And yet over time, over the last 100 years, as they've imposed additional gun control laws, you've seen increases in violent crime. I mean, their murder rate is still lower than it is in the United States, so the gap is getting much smaller, but it's much higher than it used to be. And now the overall violent crime rate in Britain is about twice what it is in the United States.
Overall, violent crime rate is twice what it is in the United States with all of those gun laws there.
Right, and it's probably actually even higher. But there's been some scandals and some problems with how the British have been reporting their crime rates. Not all the crimes that have been reported to them by citizens seem to be ending up in their numbers. But it's at least twice as high. The gun crime rate in just the last 5 years has gone up by about 40%.
Well, now, of course, we've heard that traditionally the British bobby, the British patrolman, wasn't armed. Is that still the case, or are some of them carrying weapons now?
A large number of them are carrying guns.
Well, why would they do that? Because we have all these strict gun laws there to protect the people.
Right. Well, what they've found is that even though handguns have been banned in the country since the beginning of 1997, so it's basically illegal for anybody other than a police officer or a military person to have possession of a handgun. And even though it's an island nation, which you would think would make it relatively easy for them to control the inflow of guns, the police have been complaining about a flood of illegal guns, that handguns have been coming into the country. Basically what they're finding is that drug gang problem has been increasing, and just as the drug gangs can bring in drugs into the country, they can go and bring in guns and other things to help them protect their turf from others who may try to invade it.
So it really is true that when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns.
That's right.
And of course, this is really what, I mean, these things are so self-evident. And yet, of course, there are those who would confuse the issue and keep us from really being able to address it efficiently. Well, then there's so many things that, of course, this bias against gun is so overwhelming. And we see people like Charles Schumer, and I know that there's Gottlieb, who I think Gun Owners of America, said that Charles Schumer, Senator Schumer, who is violently anti-gun, but he has an armed bodyguard, in other words, a bodyguard that carries a gun to protect him. So why should he have the right to have somebody who is armed protecting him when I don't have the right, to carry a gun to protect myself and my family? Or do we have sort of an elite class in America today, like Rosie O'Donnell and so many, Senator Feinstein and the others, who want the ability to have guns to protect them, but not to protect the common folks?
Right. No, it is. It is kind of strange. And you have other instances like Rosie O'Donnell, for example. And Schumer hasn't spoken out on exactly why it's okay for him to have a bodyguard. But in Rosie O'Donnell's case, she said that she felt threatened by crime. Well, the problem is anybody who wants to have a gun for defense feels threatened by crime. She's nothing unique in that regard. And But you have lots of politicians, Mayor Daley in Chicago, who, unless you're a big donor to the mayor, you're not going to get a permit to have a handgun in the city there. He has 24-hour round-the-clock armed bodyguard protection. He has at least two armed bodyguards with him at all times. And yet, he won't even go and visit some dangerous parts of the cities. And cab drivers, he passes laws that forces them to pick up people in very dangerous parts of the city. You know, these guys, being a cab driver is probably the most dangerous profession in Chicago as far as on-the-job deaths that occur. And also people who live in high-crime areas in the city. And yet, while he understands the benefits of being able to protect himself with the gun, he doesn't seem sympathetic with other people being able to do it.
And, of course, this sort of thing really gives hypocrisy a bad name. And this is not only true in Chicago and Rosie O'Donnell, but it's really true all across our country where the politicians, they want armed guards to protect them. They just don't want the population to have guns to protect themselves. And so, you know, of course, as we see what's happening today, and you've actually analyzed the statistics, you pointed out in your book, The Bias Against Guns, that any time any child is shot with a gun, immediately that's headlines all across America. But if some child uses a gun wisely to protect a member of the family, that is blacked out all across America. Do you want to give a couple of examples and then explain why that is?
Right. Well, yeah, you see cases, I found about 10 cases in the year prior to finishing my book where children had used guns in heroic situations, I thought, to go and save lives, sometimes the lives of their mother or their grandmother. And when those types of events would occur, you'd be lucky to find one short story in the local newspaper. There's a case in Indiana where an 11-year-old kid had saved the life of his grandmother, a gang leader. The boyfriend of the boy's mother, who was a drug addict, and she had left the scene, but apparently at one time the boy's mother, before she had left, had told this gang leader about the money and jewels that the grandmother had had there. The grandmother had adopted the boy when the mother left. And anyway, this gang leader had apparently stabbed the grandmother and was threatening to kill her. When the boy went and got the grandmother's gun and fatally shot him in his chest. The boy's father, who had died of cancer several years earlier, had taken the boy out shooting and taught him shooting when he was 8. And the boy, fortunately, was a good enough shot to go and save his grandmother's life. But if other cases...
But, of course, how was that handled by the media? I mean, it was a spectacular case of a young boy saving the life of his grandmother. But how did the media deal with that?
Well, there was one short story in Indiana paper where the event occurred. And the reporter there, who had written other crime stories that had gotten picked up and carried in many different newspapers, I called her up. And I just wanted to get her impression why, let's say, a story she had done on a cab driver being killed in a holdup would be rated sufficiently interesting to be picked up in several dozen newspapers around the country. Yet this case wouldn't get picked up by any other newspapers and was fairly short even in her own newspaper. And her reaction was that she thought editors were very leery of trying to put guns involving children in a sympathetic light because they were concerned about things like accidental gun deaths, and they didn't want to go and somehow condone children being able to get access to guns.
And yet, of course, this is what saved that life and which would save many other lives if we had access to the guns. What you're pointing out is that there is a bias in the media against guns and even in telling the truth about these stories, and they do tend to color the stories very emotionally, don't they?
Right, and it tends to snowball and build on each other because you know, these reporters are affected by the news coverage. And the next time when they get a positive story, since they've constantly hear about the exaggerated coverage of the bad things that happen and never hear about the benefits themselves from other places in the country, they're going to be even more leery than they were in the past, or even more cemented in their views about perceptions about the risk. And I think it really endangers people's lives, that type of misimpression.
And, of course, basically it is your contention, after having studied this and studying it very thoroughly, that guns save a lot more lives than are lost. Would that be an accurate appraisal?
No, I think that's exactly right. And, few people would realize from listening to the news that citizens use guns defensively to stop crime. Some 4.5 times more frequently each year than guns are used in the commission of crime. But what you find is that when different types of gun control laws get passed, there's either no change in violent crime rates or violent crime rates actually increase. And even simple things like requiring people to lock up their guns in their home that we now have in 17 states, you find more people dying after those laws get passed than you had previously. You see increases in successful murders in the home when people are no longer able to go and get guns to protect themselves, either because they're scared into not owning a gun in the home or because it's stored away in such a way that people can't get access to it.
And, of course, these gun lockup laws, really, you might as well not have a gun if you've got to have it stored, locked, and unloaded in the house. It would never do you any good if you were come under an attack from an intruder, would it?
Right. Well, in fact, that's what I think the whole point of these laws are. They're trying to condition people into not thinking about having guns for self-defense.
Yeah, well, of course, this is a planned, orchestrated program all across America by people who have an agenda, and yet most people, I don't think, understand that, do they?
Well, it's kind of hard for me to get in people's minds about what's motivating them, but it surely seems as if it's something that's been planned out. And I guess over time, as I've just seen how they've kind of worked through these things, it seems like they have a very long-term perspective in terms of gradually preventing people from owning guns to protect themselves and others and make them more dependent upon the government for protection.
All right. Well, let's go to Daryl, who's calling in from Pennsylvania. Hi, Daryl. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan, and I want to thank you both for keeping the issue of gun control, how evil it is, in front of the American people. And you had mentioned private protection is an important issue. One caller mentioned the Constitution. And, of course, I think you would both agree that one of the major issues we need to look at also in attacking gun control is the fact that authoritative government or tyrannical government plus gun control always in the 20th century has equaled genocide, whether it was Ottoman Turkey where the Armenians were the targeted people or the Soviet Union, Red China, Guatemala, Cambodia, Uganda, all these people had gun control laws that targeted certain groups of people, disarmed them, and then genocide occurred. And after I get off, I'd like you to both address that issue. I'd like to make one other point, and that is that Gun Owners of America and Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership have a lot of good books that folks can check out their websites and read concerning that issue of genocide and gun control. And I have seen Dr. Law quoted in several of those books. So again, thank you both so much for what you're doing. I urge folks to check out RadioLiberty.com and all the great information materials you offer there, Dr. Stan. God bless you both.
Thank you so much, Daryl. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Do you have any comment at all on what Daryl was saying?
Well, no, I mean, I think one of the very reasons why the Second Amendment was put in there was to restrain government. And I think it does do that to some extent. I think it'd be nice if academics did some work on that area. I really don't know any empirical work that academics have done on it. Maybe it's just part of their own biases that exist there, but I think it's something that needs to be looked at in a more systematic way than people have done so far.
Well, of course, I think that your approach to this is simply from a logical point of view and simply pointing out that so many of the things we've been told are just, it ain't necessarily so. Well, we're just about out of time. Our guest today has been Dr. John Lott. His book, The Buyers Against Guns, it's available Amazon.com and any bookstore. Any other telephone number you'd like to get out or website?
I guess my website is johnrlott.com, and it has some op-ed pieces and other things that I've written.
Well, of course, they're all good, and thank you so very much for being with us. That's John R. Lott?
Right, .com.
John R. Lott. .com, and you can go there and you can get the information Dr. Lott has written, and certainly find out what this is all about. His book is excellent. In fact, both books are excellent. We've read them both. But both of them point to the fact that, of course, we're losing our ability to defend ourselves. And really, if we don't defend ourselves, who is going to defend us? Down throughout history, when people have been disarmed, as the people of Rwanda found out, it can be a very, very disastrous situation. Thank you so very much, Dr. Lotta. Really appreciate you being with us. Look forward to talking to you in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. John Lott. He's certainly always one of my very, very favorite guests.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention, of course, we carry Miracle Tooth Soap products. We certainly can't make any medical or medicinal claims for it, but we can tell you that many of our people who've used these products really rave about them and say that they've really helped them. All we can do is suggest you get them and try them. And there's a soap. There's a moisturizing soap, which I bathe with every day. And, of course, then there is a neutralizer, which is a very alkaline sort of solution. And, of course, some people say it helps their heartburn. Basically, it's like taking baking soda, but highly mineralized, has something else in it. Other products which, for whatever reason, many people feel are beneficial to them. And then, of course, there's a lotion and a gel. And we can suggest, if you'd like to get a full set of the Miracle Tooth Soap products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like simply a list of the material we have from the producer, so you'll know what they claim about it, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But I will tell you, many people who use these products are really, really sold on. They have multiple uses. And then, of course, we certainly want to mention that if you do not have a supply of food and other things, the things that you would need in case of an emergency here in America, remember, they are laying aside supplies for the elite. For the people in FEMA, they're actually setting up relocation camps because they're planning on a major catastrophic event. What do they know that we don't? If you'd like to know how to lay in a supply and what you need, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for a Ready Reserve Food Catalog. That's a Ready Reserve Food Catalog. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send that catalog out to you without charge right away. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we really depend on those of you who listen to our program to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, and then on our weekend program to some 36 stations. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, where for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter. Give us a call. 1-800-5-448-927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we hope that you'll want to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, some people just subscribe to the newsletter, and we appreciate that. If you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, the March newsletter dealt with the real reason for the war in Iraq that you were never told. The April newsletter deals with the background, the the AIDS epidemic, and of course the main newsletter deals with the SARS epidemic and genetic engineering, and of course the June newsletter will be out hopefully in 3 or 4 weeks, and will give you real insight into the real danger that we face today. When you understand the forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, intent upon carrying out what's described in Ephesians 6, 11, pardon me, in Revelation 6. And, of course, as you read that and you begin to understand the true motive of the fourth horseman of the apocalypse. So, again, of course, if you'd like, of course, to get a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We hope many of you want to get our video, The Brotherhood of Darkness. We hope you want to get some of Dr. Cuddy's books. Great new book. It's called Cover Up. We just got that one in stock. That's Cover Up by Dr. Dennis Cuddy, or his other book, Secret Records Revealed, The Globalist, Now is the Dawning. If you'd like, of course, a catalog, they're all listed there, or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where, of course, you can pull down a list of all the various books that we offer, or that I've written, that Dr. Dennis Cuddy has written, and, of course, we hope that you'll go there and listen to our Internet programs, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours every day and not get a thing accomplished. But if you listen 5 hours or maybe even a couple of hours a day, you'll get an education, you'll hear some amazing guests, you'll get a different understanding of what's going on. Because we're not paid, you know, millions of dollars every year, not to tell you the truth. In fact, we're not paid millions of dollars every year at all. We do what we do because we want to teach the American people what I've learned after 40 years about the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged today. So go to our website at radioliberty.com, and of course you can pull down my newsletters. They're posted there. You don't have to subscribe, although we'd like you to subscribe and become part of the Radio Liberty family, but you can pull down our newsletters, and we give you our permission to copy them. You can listen to our archive programs, which we maintain there for 4 or 5 weeks after the program. And, of course, we encourage you to copy those programs and get them out. And you actually can get MP3 programs. Our programs are available from certain people who make them available if you prefer that type of commentary. And, of course, my Genesis program is available on MP3 by going to Genesis. And, of course, some of the other programs are available as well. So you can certainly go to our website and learn about more about that. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will pray for America, that you'll pray for our leaders and for our ministers, that you'll pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God will never again bless this nation. And we will see his wrath in this country in the not-too-distant future. And then, of course, we ask you to remember my ministry, Radio Liberty. Please pray for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you with another fascinating program, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.